Yo, yo, welcome to Highway Diary. I'm your host, Eric Hollerbach. With me,
Steve Saunders.
Hey, what's up? We met at Monkey Butler, you know?
That's right.
Did a little improv together. Now we're standing in front of the Thai Festival in downtown Los Angeles, and we're about to see some Muay Thai fights.
Absolutely. I haven't seen any Muay Thai before. I'm really excited to see it live for the first time.
All these people are just gathered around, probably 2,000, 3,000 people right now, just all crowded around the street, just watching people about to kickbox each other.
Yeah, it's pretty great. So from what I understand, it's like Fight Club, where if you show up, you have to fight. Is that right?
Yeah, I think, and we're, no one's allowed to talk about this. This is very illegal. Even the cops are putting money on the fights, like, but they know it's illegal too. So.
Right, we'll have to edit this out of the podcast.
Yeah, it's very surreptitious. But yeah, some people from my gym, Muay Thai Academy of America, are fighting tonight, so I'm gonna show my support. Maybe I'll do one of these days, but I don't think I'm there yet.
You should. Whoever wins the competition, you should just take off your shirt and stand in the middle of the ring and challenge it.
Just set up the next fight. Get buzz behind
absolutely.
It. It's like a WWE wrestler.
Yeah, have someone play some really angry music and just walk in. Go around the ring about 6 or 7 times, pumping up the crowd that is probably dispersed.
I'd rather challenge the loser, you know, like someone who gets knocked out like real fast. My plan is I want to just have one fight and then put it on my Wikipedia page, like amateur kickboxing record, 1-0, and then retire.
Challenge someone that got knocked out and say that the challenge expires in 2 minutes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that way they'll still be unconscious and you can just kick the shit
out. Or just
out.
Like in a week. So they're like still punch drunk. They're still slurring. Right. Just get in there.
There you go.
Job done. So
I feel like there's no way this could fail.
This is
and then if they don't accept the fight, they're yellow.
Exactly. They're like, it's like, hey, you know, let's do this. You got challenged in front of everybody. Everybody saw the challenge.
Right, yeah.
Everybody saw the build-up. What's up? You're not showing up? That's weird.
It's just, I mean, it's unprofessional what it is.
All right, we're going to catch back in a sec. We're going to watch some fights. Yo, yo. Okay, so we just saw a bunch of fights. You know, my gym kind of went 1-0.
Mm-hmm.
That's how, you know, but you show your support. I'm just freaked out. I love people throwing spinning back fists. That's always exciting. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, this like golf swing in a form of a punch comes around.
Right.
They don't expect it.
It's fun to see.
Yeah. Some guy I trained with got dropped like pretty clean and almost knocked out. They went to standing 8. Standing 9, he just made it. The glass just cleared from his eyes for him to continue fighting. Then he drops the guy. It was, you know, great night of fights. It was free. There was just like 3,000 people standing around. Just, you know, if you close a street down, put a ring up, and have people start and kick each other in the head, people are going to fucking show up in droves,
man. Who doesn't like to see grown men and women?
Yeah.
Beating the living shit out of each other.
Exactly. See, earlier in the day, got here earlier, I was walking by the Buddhist monk tent,
mm-hmm.
you know? They have a tent, and they're like, oh, yeah, we're Buddhist. Right. And, you know, a lot of white people were getting their pictures with them.
Sure.
You know, like, hello. But just for their, like, fucking white guilt Facebook feed.
Yeah.
So they could be like, oh, he's as a monk. Oh, that's a cultured
Look,
person.
Look, I have a Thai friend.
Exactly. That as soon as the fights kicked off, let me tell you something, that monk tent was fucking empty, and everyone was going, ugh!
But, you know, if the monks would have started throwing down.
That's true.
Like some Shaolin.
Yeah.
That would have been amazing. It's probably very culturally insensitive to
but
say
they're
that,
like, oh,
at a Thai festival.
We could be the victor in the fight. See, we're Shaolin monks, but we don't have to prove it. In the fucking ring, dude.
That's right.
We know spiritually. It's like, no fucking monk. If you got fucking magic powers, if you think you got, like, super scholarly monk one-inch punches and weird shit like that,
right.
Do it.
Yeah.
Do it.
Here's the thing. The wooden board doesn't actually swing at you. And that's why they're able to do all these things. And take forever before any hit.
Right.
If they did that, if you had a guy who was taking, I don't know, 30 minutes before a hit to psych himself up, you put him in a ring, he's going to get dropped before he even gets...
Because he's like a head case about it.
Yeah. The fourth breath, in and out, done.
Yeah.
By that, the guy...
See, also you're saying that the Shaolin monk fights a board instead of an opponent.
Yeah.
And it's more of a psychological thing that he can fight. He's not actually in the gym mixing it up.
A concrete block.
Right. He's like, I'm 500-0 against a concrete block.
Yeah.
That thing's never punched me once. Look at that.
What? How just messed up would they be mentally if somehow there was an earthquake or something, which happens in LA quite often apparently now,
mm-hmm.
and the block got kind of wobbly
right.
and fell and attacked him, and he was unable to continue? Maybe even got counted out.
He got KO'd.
All of a sudden, there's your undefeated streak against an inanimate object. Because
all those victories are decision victories, because they're not like you can't finish the wall. You can't knock out the wall.
Well,
the one victory the wall had on him was a total KO. You know?
I feel like in any sport, if you literally sever your opponent in two.
Right.
That should be the end.
Yeah. So Steve Saunders, we met, I was teaching a class at Monkey Butler,
yep.
you know?
Monkey
so,
Butler.
So, here's what else I want to say about that. Famously, we started with 16 students. My teaching methods seem to have scared away about 8 of those students. And, I started to look around, whoa, half the class is gone. I don't know what I'm doing here, but I thought I was trying to and tell people that improv is more important than their own lives. And
clearly.
To take it fucking really serious. Like, you're gonna, you're either gonna come to class every day or, shoot up the post office. Like, you gotta have that level of intensity about it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Maybe that pushed some people the wrong way. I don't know.
And I think people just aren't used to, or at least aren't as used to as they should be, to criticism. Mm. And that's something that, in a lot of schools, you're just going to hear, that was great. This is how it can be better. And if it wasn't great, you're going to hear a little more of, this is how it can be better. But you're never going to hear, no. I mean, no. There's no wrong answers in improv, but there totally is.
Right.
And I think that kind of, people weren't ready to hear no. Yeah, I think especially Monkey Butler is a great improv school. A lot of really amazing people go there and amazing teachers, but it's also just very focused on the positive.
Right.
And there really is, if there's any negativity in a class, it's cut out, and for good reason.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're there to have fun. We're there to laugh. We're there to learn, absolutely, but we're not there to tear each other down and that kind of stuff. Not that you were tearing anybody down, but I think just that slight change, people were like, whoa, okay, I'm not ready for that kind of thing.
Right. So. See, I was trying to bring, because I came from UCB New York, where I would go, that is the most competitive feeling. Like, you feel like you're in, like, some dance academy,
mm-hmm.
and so, like, you got to flash dance in the mirror, like, for 6 hours a day if
right.
you think that your ass is going to be perky enough to be a ballerina in a dance company.
Sure.
Let me tell you something. We were
you have to have a really perky ass to do improv. If you don't, why are you showing up?
If you could take that analogy, what I'm saying is you feel like I have to be the funniest fucking person ever to break through here,
mm-hmm.
and the classes are so intense. And I would go home crying from UCB class. But, it's because it's like, oh, I feel like I'm not funny. Someone I really respect was saying I wasn't funny. But it's like, no, you got to know that that's possible. And then every time you do an improv, really try to not make that error. And then
mm-hmm.
every time you can put those skills into your soul so it's in the heartbeat, then you're a fucking samurai.
Right.
And that's what I was trying to do.
And we've come full circle.
There you go. So, that's how it is.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's me defending myself. I have the class left.
No, yeah, and I come from an athletic background where it's not all, oh, yay, you showed up, here's mm-hmm. a trophy. That's not how it was when I was growing up. I mean, it was, you showed up, yay, now you're going to work.
Yeah.
And you're going to bust your ass. And if you aren't able to do it, then you're going to go join a team that doesn't have cuts.
Yeah.
Or you're going to not do sports.
But I would always, I could really feel the energy of the class, and maybe I should have just dialed it back. Started giving more compliments to lower the pressure And like, you know what I mean? I feel like maybe I could have managed that pressure gauge a little easier. But I was trying to, especially like with some like three line scenes, that is the most important thing. Anyway, I'm just talking about this over and over again. I train like a fucking super soldier because I care about it. And here's the other thing. I know when you go to auditions, listen, those people are going to want to fucking be blown. They're, you know, you got to shoot their dicks off with a rocket launcher to get any kind of action in this
just
town,
to get in the door.
I mean? So it's like you can't. I don't think that you can think about it. It's like, that's between you and sandwiches. If you quit your day job and you're like, I'm going to be an actor, between you and sandwiches is being the best fucking actor they've seen when they've seen 150.
Right.
So, you know, it's not like a hobby for me. This is like life or death. You know, if you can't fucking make it past that level and actually do something with this, what are you doing?
Right.
And I think I kind of butted heads because I think sometimes they were like a hobby organization and I'm not like a hobby kind of person.
Mm-hmm.
Like I kind of want to do this for a living, and so I do everything I possibly can all the time to do that. So, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and improv is funny because you've got people who are they've moved to LA to become an actor.
Yeah.
And they're doing improv as part of their acting training, and they're committed, and they have a goal in mind. And then you've got people who just really enjoy being around really funny people and kind of creating with them, and they are doing it, like you said, as a hobby. And then you've got people who are just terrified of public speaking, and they do improv to get over that.
Right.
So when you've got that kind of array, you're going to run into a lot of people who are like, okay, I'm just doing this for fun.
Yeah.
It's almost like if you go to a basketball court and there's always that guy in rec specs and way too short shorts who's D'ing up on everybody like crazy and just running up on people and getting in people's faces, and you're like, dude, we're just trying to shoot around. And they think that like Tom Izzo or John Calipari are in the stands watching just to make sure that Pan Pacific Park doesn't have the next Michael Jordan who is 40 years old.
Right. So, different levels of intensity. Hopefully I wasn't a guy with fucking armbands on and trying to make it.
Not quite.
maybe some days.
Maybe not quite the armbands, but definitely the rec specs.
So, you're a sports fan, soccer fan. You know, you grew up doing a lot of soccer stuff. You still follow? Do you follow all the European FIFA things going
on? I do. I'm a massive supporter of Arsenal. I'm also a Real Madrid fan. I actually, at the Thai festival, there was a guy, I'm wearing an Arsenal shirt, as the listeners can see, and there was a guy who was filming something, and there were a couple people, and I like the photo bomb, so I walked behind it, and I lifted up the crest, and I just kind of gave one of those. I winked, for those who can't see. Yeah. And he calls me over, so I might be on Thai TV. He calls me over, he goes, Arsenal! And, like, just shot me in the crest. So I mean, that's great. But yeah, I'm way into that, probably more so than most American sports at this point.
Sweet. So yeah, do you still like play soccer at all, or is it a
I'm not playing this season for various reasons, mostly because I'm trying to focus the majority of my energy on acting, on improv, on producing, that kind of stuff.
Right.
Because I feel like it's about time for me to step into the professional ranks. I've been doing it with at a very high level, but I feel like because I'm not, the majority of my support for myself, my life is not coming from acting.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like it's still somewhat amateur. And
right.
So I'm ready to step up and do, you know, the things I need to do to join the guild and that kind of stuff, which I'm already eligible, but to make that leap in there and just basically say, okay, I'm done with the free stuff. I'm done with the fun. Hey, let's make a really cool thing. And now it's time to make it my profession. So
right.
I've been pulling away a little bit from that, but I am still coaching. I work for an amazing company that coaches 12 months to 12 years. And it's just the most fun thing ever. It's like,
you're teaching kids about acting and stuff?
About soccer.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah, we teach 12-month-olds the method. No.
That's cool.
We teach.
So that's not such a bad day job, you know.
It's the greatest day job I'll ever have. Yeah, that's pretty sweet. Absolutely.
Oh, that's great. Any people join the Olympic team, you think? Any up-and-comers?
I've got some 2-year-olds that definitely have potential.
Sculpt them.
In the next 22 years or something.
But yeah, we were also, like I said, we were going through the Thai festival, the highlight being the Thai boxing. We also got some pad Thai. I got like a shrimp stick. I was eating chicken earlier.
You dropped it on the ground and the guy laughed at you. That was rude.
Yeah, he did.
Did you take that as rude?
Not at all. I go, oh, I dropped my shrimp stick. You know, I was trying to be funny. You know?
Okay. Because I thought he was laughing. That's
not nice. No, I don't give a shit. Anytime I get a laugh, I'm excited. I don't care. They're laughing at me. That's fine. But yeah, there was some, what was weird is like, there's like nightclub act. There's one section that's like nightclub and they have like, you know, the Thai dancers, but also like them doing comedy, but it's in Thai. So there's like 3 people in the audience.
But, I saw when I was walking through, there was a stage set up and musicians playing and it finally occurred to me why you're not hearing really big acts coming out of Thailand because the music was just weird.
It's just always the same kind of bang, bang, bang,
bang, bang, bang. Yeah.
Set to different singers.
And then the singers sounded like they were country singers that weren't singing like American words. Like we would understand.
Right.
So it just felt weird. Not that they should be singing in English. Obviously, they're not from here. But it was just weird to hear kind of that style.
Like them emulating the Western style.
That it's still about pickup trucks and dogs and fishing, right. But you don't know exactly which verse is which.
Mm-hmm. So I saw something on Facebook that you're applying to grad school. Is that not true?
That is not, no.
Yale directing? That's not true.
No, that's one of my very good friends who I also work with in a producer-director relationship. He applied to the Yale School of Directing.
Oh, I see. I misinterpreted my Facebook stalking of you for this interview.
Hey, no worries.
So do you want to talk about the New Level sketch comedy TV show?
New Level, yeah. We're about to shoot the finale this week. It's a really fun show. It's a very interesting idea, an interesting twist on things. It's kind of like...
What's the concept?
The concept, it's like sketch comedy in a late night comedy scenario. So it's almost like Conan meets 30 Rock. So it's like the behind the scenes of a comedy show with sketches thrown in there, and then out of left field comes a bunch of elements from professional wrestling without the actual
So it's like a fighting. Good variety show with meta levels to it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really, if you don't get it, you're probably not smart enough.
Right.
But it's got an amazing cast, and everyone is really fun to work with, and we have a great time shooting it, and I think that comes out. So.
Cool. Check out the New Level, the series finale, or the season finale coming up soon.
But I also feel like improv is so important to study for anyone who wants to do anything in comedy, be it writing, directing, acting, anything, because you learn so much. Because you literally, it's like we were talking about fight, it's literally bare knuckle, no pads, anything, and you just go. And if you don't have the technique, then you're going
to
fall.
And it really it makes you learn to trust your natural imagination that's always available to you at all times.
Right.
So it's like, if I can be funny on stage with no time, then when I'm writing and I can constantly access that instantly funny person, and then you can translate it to writing, you can translate it to stand-up. Plus, you're performing all the time, so you kind of know how to get your timing down. Yep. So I totally agree. It's like the religion of comedy.
Sure.
It's like it's the raw fucking shit.
And you look at pretty much anybody on TV. They've got UCB. They got Groundlings. They've got just extensive improv training. And it used to be all stand-up, and I think it's switched because improv has so much more of an acting element to it.
Mm-hmm. And I think stand-ups also can kind of get a little egocentric and not always good at working with others because they're like, no, it's my shit. Everything, all of my ideas are perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they're sculpting. But with improv, you kind of learn that, oh, you know, in the moment, you know, my mind runs out of shit. So it is good to have other funny people around.
Right.
So it kind of humbles you over and over again when other people have a better joke than you in the moment, you know. Mm. But, so that gets you, anyway, yeah, improv. I still love it, but, you know, I like, you know, going on stand-up. Yesterday, this is something you did post to Facebook, and I'm pretty sure that it was you and not a repost. This was a year ago. I'm going to read about a paragraph. Seems like you were having an inspirational day.
Okay.
April the 24th, 2013.
Uh-huh.
Yesterday was a testament to how awesome my life is. Started the day in searing pain, physically and emotionally, from the violent murder of my car. Spent half the day in the hospital and waiting rooms, watching bad soap operas in languages I didn't understand. And walking up, yeah, but there's always nice cleavage in those, you know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
Sure. And walking up and down Sunset Boulevard to various buildings that make up the Kaiser campus. Should have been one of the worst days, but thanks to some awesome friends, and probably codeine, you didn't write that, was able to turn around the end with some awesome birthday dinner and drinks. Thanks to all my birthday wishes, everyone. They really clearly worked. Whoa. So your car got murdered, and then you got injured.
Yeah.
What happened?
So, the day before... No. The day before my birthday, I got hit by a car.
Right.
On my way to work. And I was just driving down Colorado Boulevard in Santa Monica. And this guy, who was like 90-something years old, ran a stop sign and right into me. And my car is still jacked up. I, at the time of that post, had thought that she wasn't going to make it. I had been told by 6 or 7 people that it was not able to be repaired.
Could not resuscitate.
Absolutely. But I did not sign the DNR. It was just a CNR.
Mm-hmm.
So let that be a lesson.
They almost cremated it. And it is a CAR.
That's right. And, Pumpling. And... So I in my mind, like, and that was the first car that I ever bought with my own money, and I worked really hard to maintain it and everything, and it was a nice car.
Did the guy have insurance? You know?
Yeah. I mean, I got a check for the car like within a month, not even like a couple weeks. They totaled it full value, and plus a little more because I'm a negotiating genius, but. I'm still working with them with the medical stuff. I wanted to make sure that everything was sorted before I went and let them close the books on it. So that's not completely done yet, but I got some pretty serious damage to my ribs. I thought I was fine, and then the next day I woke up in just ridiculous pain. And I was like, I can't do anything. I was out of work for 10 days. That was the hardest part, being away from the field and away from the kids. Somehow it got to the parents because they were asking about me, and it got to the parents of the kids that I coach that I was in a serious accident, and it basically telephoned from like Steve got hit and he's got bruised ribs to Steve got hit and he's fighting for his life.
Right.
Basically. And they're like, where can they send flowers? I'm like, I'm at home. Like, I can't move, but I'm still, you know, I'm doing great compared to what I could
do. So you got an x-ray and they broke your ribs and stuff?
Not broken, bruised. Oh, which is just as bad. It just takes a little less time to heal.
Yeah.
So.
I had that with my foot, too. So, do they give you steroids?
Not steroids. They did give me really heavy strength Tylenol. Maybe with codeine in it.
Mm-hmm.
And they gave me...
And then you were feeling better all of a sudden, and you had a really great message on Facebook.
Yeah, I mean, I...
Was it the codeine?
No. No, it wasn't. I wasn't even taking anything at that point. It was just, you know, my life is incredible. I live and work doing what people do for fun in a place where people aspire to go for a week one day, and they work their entire lives to come and visit. And I look out my window and I see palm trees and I see the blue sky and the sun and everything that makes LA beautiful, and I'm just like, this is mine. Like, this has been given to me. Through circumstances, I am able to live here, and it's just a blessing every day of my life. And I have amazing friends through Monkey Butler and other improv schools and soccer and schools that I went to before moving out here. And it's just, when I think about how crappy that day could have been, getting hit right before my birthday, spending the entire birthday day in waiting rooms. And not only that, but I'm a huge Cavs fan, and that was the day that they announced they were bringing back Mike Brown.
Oh, no.
So I literally had just said, can this get any worse? And then they said, breaking news, the Cleveland Cavaliers have just recently fired Lakers coach Mike Brown. And I went, yep, there it is. But that's kind of the point where I said, no, I'm not going to allow a day to be this crappy.
Right.
And I'm a very positive person. I'm way too blessed to ever be down. That's how I see it. So I turned it around.
There you go. Very inspirational words there. Notre Dame student broke into massage parlor. What's he going to do in there? What's he going to get in there? And gorges on Hot Pockets, according to the cops. So again, a Notre Dame college student was arrested after breaking into the massage parlor. Apparently, he knew that they had a stockpile of Hot Pockets in the freezer. He went in there, drunk as shit, put like 15 of them in the microwave at once. In a drunken stupor, watched them rotate. Yeah. Who knows how he knew about this hoard. And, you know, then he gorged himself to death. Well, not to death. And
wow.
And then they just woke up in the morning, like 10 a.m., found him passed out, was just covered in Hot Pockets, you know?
That's, I think he made three mistakes. One was putting 15 Hot Pockets in one microwave at a time. That was a bad idea. He's lucky that they found him alive and not burned to a crisp, because it's very possible that microwave could have exploded and caused a fire.
Or just the lava cheese, like, could have given him 30. If he's just he's just eating the cartons, too. He's just eating everything right out of the microwave.
Secondly, if you're going to make 15 Hot Pockets, eventually, probably around 4 or 5, they're going to start getting really cold and yucky.
Right.
Because they're not going to wait until you're ready to eat them to start cooling.
Right.
They're going to start cooling right away. And with Hot Pockets, there's not a whole lot of a window between, okay, it's okay to eat this now and throw this away. It's disgusting.
Mm-hmm.
There's about 4 seconds you have in there. And if you're going to try to fit 15 Hot Pockets in a microwave is one thing, in your mouth in 4 seconds, that's a whole other one. And the other one, you know, if you are going to eat that many Hot Pockets, do it in a place that is safe and people aren't going to find you the next day.
Yeah.
No one ever has said, I found him the next day sleeping peacefully in his bed.
You gotta at least have enough Hot Pocket energy to leave. See, actually, I read this wrong. What actually happened was he was warming up macaroni and cheese when the fire alarm gone off, and he passed out before that. So, that's the problem.
Wait a minute. He passed out.
I guess he was.
And then warmed up macaroni and cheese.
No,
drunk?
He put in macaroni and cheese, like, after I eat these 15 Hot Pockets, I'm going to want macaroni and cheese. Let me start putting that in the oven right now.
Mm-hmm.
And he went from the microwave to the oven, you know?
I see.
So then he was warming up that, and then he left that in there when he passed out. Fire alarm, boom.
Listen,
he's busted.
It's not that big of a secret, or maybe it is, that the best place to get Hot Pockets is a massage parlor. They always have a good variety.
Yeah.
It almost always involves bacon of some sort.
And also, if the massage parlor gives out hand jobs, you don't think that they warm up a Hot Pocket when they're getting tired and they just put a blindfold on the guy and they're like, here, no, I promise, this is my vagina. You know what I mean?
First of all, I don't think they do hand jobs with their vaginas. I think
they make them like fuck a Hot Pocket. He thinks he's getting action, but he's got a blindfold on.
See.
You know what I mean?
Or maybe it's like a game to them. Like they put it in and then they jerk the guy off with their vagina and
have sex.
No, you can't do that. You have to give him a hand job with your vagina.
Oh, I see.
And then when the Hot Pocket is done, if you're not done by that time, you lose and your Hot Pocket is free.
Right. If you come before the microwave goes off,
yeah,
then you eat the Hot Pocket. But if it takes longer, then she eats the Hot Pocket.
No, it'd be because she, you know, she should be able to get in there and do it quickly.
So that's her reward.
People she that go to massage parlors don't have all day.
Right.
They're very busy. They've got other massage parlors to go to. They've got Hot Pockets they to got consume.
Their wife's voicemails to delete.
That too.
A couple doomed with bad sex life awarded $28,000. So apparently, in a court decision, an Italian couple was awarded $28,000 because, okay, so the woman was injured crossing the street. You know, she got hit by a car. And then, so she couldn't put out as much. The marriage was suffering, and they're like, you can go to the Italian court and be like, I'm suing you because my pussy's broken now.
Mm-hmm.
And give me money for my broken pussy. I guess that's the whore bill of the husband to keep this whole situation going.
Sure.
You know? Really, what is the point of monogamy? I don't know. Anyway.
That's what I learned from that story. A couple gets $28,000 for bed sex. Probably shouldn't have just been fucking each other. They need to broaden their horizons.
Well, my point is this. So, let's say you're like, all right, I'll get married. Is this person trying to get my parking spot?
Probably.
So what, let's say you're like, you know, you're both 29. And you're like, oh, okay, let's get married now. At 32, she has a car accident that primarily breaks her pussy, right? Are you going to then be like, okay, from 32 to 90, I'm not going to get in, I'm not going to have any sex because this I made a vow? You know what I mean?
Look, this like, is...
There's always situations where fidelity is weird, you know?
This is controversial.
Why make these rules?
It's something that has been a little bit taboo. But thanks to the efforts of people like Kanye West, it started to be discussed. That's what a prenuptial agreement is for.
Mm-hmm.
In the prenup, it should say, for both people, if my vagina and or penis is in some way marred to the point where it cannot perform its duties,
right,
you are hereby released from this agreement.
Right. Or also, like, the subclause is, if your pussy gets hit by a car, like, you gotta weigh up the blowjobs. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Unless if you want to keep this shit going on.
Or there's actually a technique that's used in massage parlors where they just heat up a Hot Pocket.
I heard about this.
And then they blindfold you, right, and then they just tell you that.
And the guy's like, why does it smell like oregano in here? And he's like, no, no, that's my vagina. They really trick you with that. So the Queen and the Pope are always meeting and giving each other Easter presents. But this year... the Queen Mother gave the Pope eggs, whiskey, and beer. And here, there's a little YouTube video of this, so let's play some of this audio.
Very nice. My private secretary from Australia.
Yes. Australia.
And my doctor.
Su medico.
My assistant.
Su assistente.
No, communications. Pleasure.
What do you think about someone who's just like, life is like caked in pageantry? Everywhere she goes, there's like, she just gives the Pope some eggs, and there's like, the, you know, you see the Rolls Royce pull up, all the paparazzi's there, she just gives them eggs and whiskey. And then, you know, and you know that whiskey bottle handle is just going to be like fucking kids in the asshole. You know what I mean? I don't know. Who knows if this new Pope, Pope Francis, ain't up to what Ratzenberger looked like he was up to. Ratzenberger, he looked like the emperor from the end of the Star Wars movie. Like the evil emperor, you know, who could shoot like electricity out of his fingers and was pure evil. Ratzinger looked exactly like that guy.
That was the guy that wore the hat.
Right, right, right.
And kind of like shot himself at you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right.
He had the hood, and he, you know, was the embodiment of the dark side, you know?
I think the pageantry and stuff, it's good. And it's almost like she's just a permanent reality star.
Mm.
and you are born into this family, and all of a sudden, all eyes are on you, and everything you do is a big deal. So then everything you do, your country is associated with you. And so if you give the Pope some eggs, it's like, hey, England just gave the Pope some eggs. Enjoy, Catholics.
Mm-hmm.
And so that kind of pressure and everything is a lot, but they also had just a shit ton of money as a result. So I think it's a fair trade.
You don't think... I think that there's, like, this mass hypnosis thing going on where, like, we endow someone into being a sociopath who never hears an honest word to their ear, and they have all this wealth and privileges for doing absolutely nothing, and the everyone, you know, bowing down to this person before you eat meals with them. Everybody bows down to this person, or she gets very offended if you... You know, don't do all this pageantry because she has perfect blood. First of all, that sounds like Nazi shit. Second of all, what the fuck? You know, like, we all came out of the womb and we're all equal. And if you think differently, I think you're an elitist piece of shit. So that's kind of how I see it. I think she's a very embodiment of, like, I think she really buys into the fact that she's better than other people, in my opinion. And... You know, how can you not when there's, like, all this pageantry around you constantly?
Yeah.
Like, I think we're enabling a sociopath is what I think.
Sure. And I think also creating a sociopath. I don't think she was born thinking that she was the queen.
Right.
I think but she everyone was born tells thinking, her that. Holy shit, why am
queen.
I cold?
You're the queen.
Sure.
You know? You hear that all day. Oh, yeah.
But they also, I mean, it gives them something to do. I mean, football is only on for, like, 7 months of the year. If it's a World Cup, you're great. If not... What the fuck are the Britons gonna do?
Yeah. They're attaining a cult degrees or something.
There's only so many Guy Ritchie movies out there.
To get through. After you get through, like, two box sets, it's like...
That's all they do.
Alright, I guess I'll give the Pope some eggs today.
All they do is watch football and Guy Ritchie movies.
California Cope... Okay, so a court receives a suit claiming a woman was frozen alive in a morgue. So apparently what happened was at this New Jersey hospital, my neck of the woods, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So apparently, according to the staff, a lot of the staff had reports when a private eye sent by the family went to interview there. And they were like, yeah, there was a lot of screaming coming from this bag in the fucking freezer. Then the hospital tried to put the kibosh on it. But these employees heard it. You know, I heard what I heard. That fucking bag was screaming. And so now there's this lawsuit going, you know, because they zipped up Granny before she bit the bucket, you know?
Well, it's not the whole story. She had bet her roommate that she could trick them into thinking she was dead.
Oh.
And so she... did some mind tricks and she made it so that she wouldn't be breathing as much. And when she did, it would be very subtle.
Like a Shaolin monk. That's what they trained. They're not the best fighters, but they can play a lot of head games with themselves and slow down their heart rate and stuff.
Absolutely.
Like that.
And that's kind of what she was trying to do. What she didn't realize is when you're super old and you do that, they put you in a freezer and kill you.
Right. And then, lawsuit. But it's like, hey, eggs on her face. You know, she was betting a roommate, so...
Or maybe she knew her time was going to be up. And she was like, hey, I'm going to do this. And then called up her daughter or son.
Yeah.
Or grandchild, whoever it was. Maybe a butler for one of them. And said, this is what I'm going to do. I want you to have a lawsuit ready. So that you guys can get...
You'll get a payout when I...
Yeah, exactly. Which, you know, smart grandma.
Yeah.
But she's seriously, don't put people in freezers. It's not a good idea.
Well, just, like, poke them with a stick a couple more times. Just, like, do the freezer test.
Isn't there a sign on every freezer that says, don't fucking put people here?
Right, who are still alive.
I don't think they have that disclaimer.
Yeah.
I think it just says, don't... Or it's got, like, a picture of someone going into a freezer with an X on it.
Right.
it's not clear whether that person is alive. You can't take the vitals of a picture.
There should be like a picture with a guy with a smiley face, like a thumbs up, and then another picture with like X's in his eyes, and like, and then it's like that one's approved.
That one, okay.
To put in the morgue.
But then there's an asterisk, and you have to go to the next picture, which is poking them with a stick no less than 5 times. And then if still, then you can put him in the freezer.
Mm. Then one good face laugh.
But I feel like the scream should have negated all of that.
Yeah, and the clawing at the bag. At one point, what I don't like about this story is they're like, yeah, we heard screams coming from the bag. Did anyone try to get the lady out the bag? No, it was just really spooky. Like, nobody, like, helped her.
And, okay, we've seen enough zombie movies. Maybe that went through their minds. Like, oh, shit, is it now? Is now the time that they start coming back?
You also don't know, like, if a body has a fermenting juice in its stomach, I wonder if it's still capable of going, oh, like, just as those gases escape.
The scientific approach.
So maybe it could have just been escaping gases from a decomposing stomach. And then it wasn't, but it was really a dead grandma, you know?
So the real thing here is don't belch when you're dead, because it'll freak people out, and then there'll be lawsuits that innocent hospitals have to
Well, how are you going to do that? You know, there's procedure to put antacids on their face when they...
There you go. If you feel like you're going to die, take an antacid. It might help you feel better, and also you won't belch when you're dead.
It'll be creepy.
It will be very creepy for anybody.
It'll scare people at the hospital. They won't help you, but they'll just be like, I heard it. Anyway, so check out a web series called Here Comes Godot. It'll be on YouTube starting April 12th. So check that shit out. Also, check me out, do stand-up. I'll post Facebooks while I'm playing gigs and shit. Steve, anything else you want to talk about?
No.
Cool. I think
that's pretty much...
You had some action. I remember when you were in class with me, you were getting some action from some movie offers and stuff like that, right?
Yeah, I've got a few movies that are in post-production ad nauseum.
Yeah, that's really the thing, right?
I just actually just recorded a song for a movie I did 2 years ago. And it can either be really good or just ridiculous. Because it's catchy, but it's also, the words don't mean anything. It's mm-hmm. it's like a pop song, really. So who knows? But if you look at it a certain way, then they can mean something. So maybe it'll become the next I Am the Walrus.
Right.
Where people are gonna be like, oh, this means this. And in reality, all it meant was the guy who wrote it had some really good weed. So I did that, and that movie should be coming out in the next, I don't know.
What's that called? Years.
It's a modern day adaptation of Love's Labor's Lost by I think his name was like William. He was this famous British guy who wrote a lot of plays. Mm-hmm.
Shakespeare. Oh, yeah.
It was one of his things, and we made it modern and shot it in Hollywood, and that was, you know, it was fun. Not sure.
Are you a producer at that? Do you act in
that? Not in that. I just acted in that. I haven't produced any of it. And then I've got another movie called Maintenance Man, which is a horror film, which I produced and starred in. That is also in post-production because we shot in Cleveland and everything there moves at the speed of Glacier.
Right.
So, which I think is mostly because there's a lot of really talented people out there who have 9-to-5s that's their priority in life because right. They live in Cleveland and priorities right. Aren't film. And so, like, our editor kind of does it when he can type of thing. And then I've got a couple other movies coming up where we are very, very close to a deal with investors to fund those. Two features and a short. The short will be shot in the next couple months, and the feature, one of the features, will be done this summer. So,
Steve Saunders making moves.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, that's what we're also doing with Here Comes Godot. And also shout out to Colin McDowell. He's our editor. He actually moved to Colorado, and we kind of did this cool thing where he would send us, cuts over Gmail, and Google Drive, and then we would give him notes on it. So, and he's been working on it for a year. We shot this thing fucking 4 years ago, so it took like that much time to sculpt it down and stuff. And,
whoa.
But some of it, the project stalled out for a little bit. But anyway.
Do you think part of the delay is the legalization of marijuana in Colorado?
Probably that, yeah, because he was really cranking it out before that, that state.
It just stopped.
Yeah, and like a lot of his messages he sends are like really giggly, and it seems like he's in some kind of childish dream world. It's very weird.
Is he like texting you, ha ha ha? Words. Yeah. Ha, ha, ha.
He called me once. He thought I was the pizza place. He tried to order from me. So he's always like hungry.
Did you send him a pizza?
No, I mean I'm from Los Angeles. I said, you probably should check your local Yelp pages.
That is true. Pizza is terrible out here.
Yeah, but it's very creative stuff what he's doing.
good.
All right, that's been another episode of. All right, that's another episode of Highway Diary in the motherfucking bag. Thanks to my guest, Steve Saunders. Good to see you.
Good to hanging out here, with you. Absolutely.